how to take shelter, since the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with religious principles, have departed into His supreme abode. So how can one ever regain these religious principles? And how can people in the coming ages actually take shelter? So here, of course, we're hearing about religious principles, and Srila Prabhupada, of course, always explained that there's only one religious principle, Dharma tu sakshat bhagavatat prastham. The only religious principle is to follow the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these orders, of course, religious principles have been given in Bhagavad Gita, and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, these are more elaborately explained. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is explaining about how to take shelter of Him with our mind, with our activities, with our senses, with our body, etc. So He's explained how to perform religious principles even on the platform of Vanashram Dharma, in the different Swadharmas, whether we are still materially inclined or if we're in the different spiritual ashrams or the different spiritual orders. Krishna has given His guidelines or codes of how to relate to Him in any situation. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, later on when this question gets answered, we'll hear how actually the religious principles and Krishna have appeared in this literary incarnation, the Srimad Bhagavatam in Srimad Bhagavad Gita. At the advent of Kali Yuga, the summary of this, if you look back in the in what's been discussed in this first chapter, we're hearing how Maharaj Parikshit was cursed, of course, to die in 7 days, and the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken, and towards the end of Krishna's pastimes, of his manifested pastimes, Krishna annihilated his own dynasty, his own associates, and went back to the spiritual world. And years later, the sages of Nameshwaranya, upon the advent of Kali Yuga, were wondering how the people in general would be able to understand or will be able to actually practice any kind of self-realization or any kind of religious principles. As we hear in the first chapter, Kalyana Pasya Samya Kala Rasmini Gejana Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Pajahu Upajutaha. And this is Srita Goswami speaking to the sages, or they're conversing with one another, that men in this Kali Yuga have but short lives, and the qualities of their characteristics, being lazy, misguided, unintelligent, and always disturbed. So there has been a system that Krishna Himself has left behind for these troubled living entities, these conditioned souls. So the sages of Nemacharanya are going through the 1,000-year sacrifice, and they are pondering and asking very sincerely and very attentively to Sutta Goswami to explain the activities of the Supreme Lord, which are filled with religious principles, which are filled with our eternal dharma. And in that way, that's how the living entity can actually reconnect or reunite with their original constitution. The same is given in the Madhya Lila, the 20th chapter. There's a verse that explains how the forgetful living entities or the conditioned souls forget their relationship with Krishna, thinking only of material activities, and how they can get out of those clutches of Maya to actually engage their thinking propensity in another activity. So Prabhupada starts stressing a lot about this thinking and speaking propensity of the conditioned soul, of the living entity, because our nature is to constantly glorify Krishna, to hear about Krishna. So this tendency, of course, can be cured if we hear topics related to Krishna. So hence at the beginning, if we trace it back at the dawn of creation, Lord Brahma gets initiated into the Vedic literatures by the Supreme Lord Himself. He hears the Srimad Bhagavatam, he sees the spiritual abode, he sees Krishna, he sees himself in relationship to Krishna, and he in turn reveals the Srimad Bhagavatam. and then it comes down in this epic succession to Srila Vyasadeva, to his son Sukadeva Goswami from Narada Muni, and now to Sukadeva Goswami and Sutta Goswami. And here we're hearing it, of course, from the sages of Namaisharanya, being instructed by Sutta Goswami himself. So in the beginning, we're hearing how Srila Vyasadeva compiled Vedic literature specifically in a different way. So he had the four Vedas, and he further divided it into the Mahabharata, the Upanishads, specifically for the less intelligent personalities. So we have, you know, those who are lower than the Brahmana caste, the less intelligent women, the Sudras, etc. So he compiled the Vedic literatures and the histories in such a way that we can engage our mind and senses in hearing about Krishna. And then from that point onwards, we can gradually evolve to hearing about the spotless Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now this is important because in this Kali Yuga, not only are we unqualified, but we actually don't have the adhikara, that's number one, and our vision is very impaired. So we have impaired vision. We need to see through someone's eyes, and we need to hear through someone. The living entity by nature, we have conditioned from our senses to the mind, to our activities, our hearing capacity, how we're subjected to illusion, cheating propensities are there, concocting mentally. So these are all defects, so the living entity cannot actually manufacture a religious system. A living entity, a minute part and parcel of Krishna, cannot manifest his own cause of conduct, his own religion. It has to come from the spotless person, it has to come from Krishna himself. And we receive this spotless knowledge coming down in Parampara. That is why the first chapter glorifies the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam has to be manifesting the qualities of a Bhagavat, one who has learned and understood what has been spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the glories of Srila Sutta Goswami have been enunciated, his qualification to have heard Srimad Bhagavatam in the presence of Sukadeva Goswami while Maharaj Parikshit was leaving, and again the glories of one who receives this knowledge of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there has to be the hearer and the recipient, they have to have qualification. And we see this, of course, in many literatures, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as well. The beginning chapter is offering praise and glories to the spiritual masters and how they have qualification to hear and speak Srimad Bhagavatam. So this literature, Krishna had explained that it is Krishna himself explains when he comes and why he comes and in what form he comes. So Krishna comes in a specific form and manifests his potencies for a specific reason. So just as he explains in Bhagavad Gita 4.8 that he comes to re-establish religious principles and to annihilate the atheists or the demons. But the primary reason, of course, is to give pleasure to his devotees. And the Lord, of course, when he descends, he manifests his full potency by displaying his pastimes, his leelas with his devotees. So when we hear of these pastimes of Krishna, not only do we get purified, but we get attraction into understanding the deeper meaning of Krishna and who he is. Not just the controller, not just the maintainer, but the summon boner. Srila Prabhupada explains this in the introduction of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that we're not only speaking about Krishna as the supreme controller of the creator, but also the summon boner. This is why we say Krishna is the absolute truth, is the absolute person, not just God. So the absolute person is the summon boner, and everything comes from him. He is the cause of all causes. So religion cannot be without God. Real religion, Sanatana Dharma, cannot be without God. any kind of religion that does not remind people how to love God as a person in a relationship, Srila Prabhupada explains that to be a cheating religion. Kaitava Dharma, he explains this in the second text of the first chapter. Religion basically means laws of God. So if we're in a system that doesn't give us any rules, codes, and conducts, that doesn't distinguish and delineate us from the Supreme Control and how we're related to Him, then that is a cheating religion. So similarly, when the Lord incarnated Himself as Lord Buddha, He did so for the reason that people were going against the Vedic literatures. In the name of the Vedic literatures, they were performing animal slaughter. So He came to deviate them from actually using Krishna's knowledge in that manner. And the whole purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna as He is. So the first Vedanta Sutra is Janmadhyasa Yatha, and Prabhupada has given so many classes on this text, the first text of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srila Prabhupada was explaining how Srila Vyasadeva, you know, gave us this Vedic literature. He spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam because he could foresee that there will be so many fools and rascals who will come and try to explain this Bhagavad Purana, but in a way that will bring about an impersonal understanding of the Absolute Truth. And this would send people to hell, as Srila Prabhupada would say. So the position that Srila Vyasadeva was in was to actually present knowledge or the religious principles in a very easy and digestible manner for common people to actually understand. So he was writing under the direction and the order of his spiritual master, Srila Narada Muni. So he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam in such a way that the Swarup, or the manifestation of the Lord, would appear for the devotee, one who is purified and one who can understand Srimad Bhagavatam, just as we start from the first canto and work our way up through to the 12th canto, then we can fully realize the form of the Lord. So Krishna is absolute, He has no duality, so His name, form, are none different. So when you chant Krishna's name, we're actually calling on Krishna directly. It's not that His name is different from His form, Krishna is absolute. So similarly, this narration of Srimad Bhagavatam is the narration of the struggle or the form of the Lord, and it has just as much potency as being face to face, direct in contact with the Lord. So of course Krishna is compared to the sun, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andhakara. So anything that is separate from Krishna, that brings about darkness. Or if we separate ourselves from Krishna, if we remove Krishna from the equation, then we are in darkness. So the Vedic literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is given to us by an authorized authority. And Srila Prabhupada gives an example that even at university level, if you're doing research, you're guided by your professors. There has to be some authority figure so that you're actually on the right track. You're not proud and you're thinking, I can do this by myself, I have all the textbooks and I will study by myself. So the student performs his research work under the guidance of his professors. So similarly, if we want to access Krishna or religious principles, we're guided by the previous acharyas who have provided Krishna in his literary incarnation. Because we do not have that divine vision that Krishna awards eventually to one who is sincere and to one who's purified, we first see Krishna through literature. We hear Srimad Bhagavatam and we can actually grasp that Krishna is a person and he's performed activities, he has a form, etc., etc. So there's one conversation that I was reading, because oftentimes we hear people saying, well, how do you know what's written in this book that you're reading is actually true or is the highest thing? Well, sometimes people may ask like that, why are you reading this literature? What about what's this book that's been written? Conversations with God. So maybe that will bring about the highest transcendental realization. What about some LSD that can heighten our spiritual experiences? So why do we stick to the Srimad Bhagavatam? And I remember Hidayananda Maharaj was questioning. He was saying there's so many religious, there are many religions that speak of the light. How can we know that we're facing the real light? Right, there's so many lights out there. Right, this path, that path. And how? Why is this one the light? Why is this one the best one that will dissipate all the darkness and all the ignorance? And Prabhupada says, light is to be realized personally. And as we hear earlier on in the Bhagavatam, explaining how this the Vedic the Srimad Bhagavatam was personally relished and realized by Sukadeva Goswami and all Sutta Goswami as well after having heard it. So they personally assimilated, digested it, and realized it. So it's very important that we understand that we read these literatures and then we will automatically realize who Krishna is and who we are. The light means it will dissipate the darkness. So in Kali Yuga, because we're lazy, unintelligent, and misguided, and we're unlucky, we need to take shelter of some source that will dissipate this darkness. And the sun seems to be the most powerful source of energy. It never diminishes. Right? It is never contaminated. So in all cases, the sun is all perfect. So Krishna is sometimes explained to be the sun, that he gives all, he gives clarity, he gives all knowledge, he gives understanding. So Srila Prabhupada says, light is to be realized personally. Light, just like this room, is dark. When there's light, it doesn't require to be inquired. Is it light? You personally perceive it is light. Just like you are hungry and foodstuff is given to you, and when your hunger is satisfied, appetite is appeased, then you naturally, you feel, yes, I'm satisfied. You don't require to inquire anymore. Therefore, it is called self-realization. Automatically, you realize you don't require to inquire. This is the process. So Prabhupada is explaining that when we approach Krishna through these Vedic literatures or through this path of pure bhakti, then everything becomes personally realized and everything for us becomes clear, because the light dissipates all the darkness. Everything is actually revealed and everything becomes known to us. We understand Krishna in his external future, in his external manifestation. We understand Krishna as the basis of everything, his spiritual energy, which everything is resting on. So because this Srimad Bhagavatam is Nigama Kalpa Thirukalita Phalam, that is, it is the wish-fulfilling tree, the ripened fruit of the desire tree of the Vedic literatures. So it can actually bring about all required transcendental realizations, and all spiritual desires can be obtained from hearing and relating to Krishna in this transcendental form, the Vedic Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada says that we should transfer our thinking energy and our speaking energy from material endeavors or to material topics or to the material energy. There's so many literatures that we might read, magazines, newspapers, etc. So there's so many places, there's so many pubs and there's so many lounges that have vast amount of literatures and novels and so many different things, documentaries. So our consciousness can become absorbed in that. And you see that sometimes people have their book clubs and they read novels, You know, they read Milton Boone or Hardy Boys. So many different authors are there. Similarly, if we want to transfer our thinking power into a spiritual energy, then we absorb ourselves in literatures that are full of Krishna. And Krishna explains that the Vedas automatically has to bring us to the point of understanding Him as a person. So because in this age of Kali, we don't have good qualities. We're very forgetful. We're lazy in the matter of spiritual affairs. If we go back and have a look at how much we were inclined spiritually before coming into contact with Krishna in this form of the Vedic literature, Krishna in the form of Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, we didn't really inquire so much. We weren't really so enthused to hear every morning, maybe once a week. So not only do we get our thirst quenched, we get nourished as well to hear more and more and get spiritual strength to understand who we are and who Krishna is. So although Krishna has unmanifested his pastimes while he was here in the land now known as India or Bharatvarsha, still Krishna remains fully potent in his transcendental form, his literatures. Just as he said, he comes, of course, in this age as the hidden incarnation, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he resides as well as religious principles in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Krishna is then his full potency, and we have to hear constantly about his glories to remind ourselves that yes, Krishna is here. Otherwise, it becomes easy for us to forget the presence of Krishna. This line in this purport says that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the transcendental sound representation of the personality of Godhead. So the sound representation, Krishna's name, Krishna's form, is absolute. So if we hear topics about Krishna, we're directly engaging with Krishna. So this is a point that I'm stressing so much, because sometimes it doesn't sink in with us. We're thinking, oh, I'm just hearing, and Krishna is very far away, and Krishna is in his spiritual planet, and it's millions and millions of yojanas away from here. And here in Bhagavatam, here, and someone else is here in Bhagavatam in Siberia or in Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan, etc. So how is Krishna here? How is Krishna present there? It's just sound, and sound waves travel only so far. So how is Krishna potent? We can, with our material consciousness, limit Krishna, because our mind cannot perceive that. Just as our mind sometimes cannot perceive how cold it can get in Russia, or how hot it can get in India, because we haven't directly perceived it. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So just because we haven't seen, let's say, just because we haven't seen a polar bear, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. There are authorities who will vouch and explain, yes, polar bears do exist. Okay. And just because we have not seen someone as white as this page doesn't mean that they don't exist. Someone coming from that region can explain, yes, they do exist. And because we haven't seen anyone as dark as this jumper doesn't mean that they're not existing somewhere. And there's an authority that can come and say, yes, I've seen people like that. So just as the Vedic literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam, specifically the ripened fruit of the Vedic knowledge, has explained Krishna's pastime and Krishna's activities, because they have transcendentally seen these activities. They have experienced Krishna's reciprocation. They have experienced Krishna's relationship. They've had direct darshan of Krishna. Therefore, they are repeating what they have seen. Just as if we ask someone who comes from a certain country, what is the weather like? What's the culture like? What do people do there for fun? Do they like going to the beach? Do they surf? What happens in that place? And then they tell us, we accept. So the acharyas, these sages at Namaisharanya, they are understanding the transcendental position of Srila Srita Goswami, haven't been in the association of Srila Goswami, and they are asking, what are the activities of the Lord? What are his past incarnations? Where has he gone after he has left, or after he unmanifested his pastimes? Where has he taken the religious principles? And therefore, the acharyas are explaining the same. Srita Goswami will explain how Krishna has manifested himself in Kali Yuga. Because Krishna has explained that he does descend in every yuga to enunciate religious principles when the Asuric culture is on a rise. So this is something we're already accustomed not only to hearing, not only to inquiring about different extraordinary activities, so we can inquire into the most extraordinary activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as given elaborately in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course the Srimad Bhagavatam explains everything from metaphysical to physical to political, military, etc. It's explained within the pastimes of Krishna. So Krishna gives us the full spectrum. Krishna explains everything in full so that we can get to understand what real religious principles are. And real transcendental knowledge and religious principles mean that we get to follow the laws of God 100% as he has given. And the best way to understand what he desires and what he wants is to hear from his representative. So his direct representative, the pure devotees, the spiritual masters, the gurus coming in this succession can help us understand how to extract real religious principles from the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And sometimes, especially when we're dealing with Bhagavad Gita, we get it a lot that people think it is nothing but bloodshed. What kind of enlightenment can you get from a place where it was intense war and so many millions and millions of soldiers died, and this is supposed to be a very spiritual subject matter? So we need someone's eyes, we need someone's ears that are highly transcendental to help us understand how actually Krishna was establishing real religious principles on that battlefield of Kurukshetra. That there was nothing sinful about what Krishna did or what his pure devotees were doing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Krishna has a few names. In the 8th text of the Ishopanishad, there's a few names that explain Krishna and his potency, that Krishna is Sudham, he's antiseptic, which means that, you know, anything that's impure, even if it comes into slight contact with Krishna, becomes purified. So Kali Yuga is an ocean of fault. So we come into contact with Krishna through his sound, through his form, there's purification that will start happening. Krishna is also apapa vidham, prophylactic, which explains more about the power of his association. And Krishna is never diminishing at any point. But the sun doesn't diminish in its potency. The sun is powerful today, it's going to be powerful tomorrow. The sun won't die. And the sun cannot be touched by sin, although it's purifying the most dingy and the most contaminated areas. The sun itself can never ever become purified. So that is Krishna, that is Krishna in his form, Krishna in his sound can never become purified. He acts in such a way that sometimes you may think, well, Krishna steals, Krishna runs away from war, Krishna does so many things. So Krishna kills a bull, right? He wrestles with Avistasura, so he has become sinful. But no, just by the touch of Krishna, that bull gets liberated. Just by associating with Krishna in in some kind of chivalry, in some kind of fight and anger. There's nothing but all auspiciousness in that association. So Krishna at any point never becomes contaminated by any kind of sin, as he remains pure as he is. So this is the potency of Krishna. This is the potency of coming into contact with Krishna through sound, through Krishna's form, through Krishna's Achavigraha. And in that way we can directly perceive Krishna. We can relish Krishna at every step. This process is one that is directly perceptible by the self. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions. Just read the translation again. Since Sri Krishna, the Absolute Truth, the Master of all mystic power, has departed from his own abode, please tell us to whom the religious principles have now gone for shelter.